Buckle up, boys and girls. The time for hiding behind your phones and complaining is over. It's time the elite's grip on our lives and influence on this city is challenged. It's gonna be a long, bumpy ride, but it's a ride worth jumping on, a cause worth joining. Welcome, everyone, to the third installment of the New Resistance Podcast. So let's do this.
I'm telling you, good citizens have turned to real concern and revolutionary citizens real soon. How do you feel about being complicit in perpetuating that? The greatest toast ever perpetuated on the American people, and you're part of it.
Now we're supposed to have unity. Let me tell you something. I'm part of the new resistance.
What up, ladies and gentlemen? In case you don't know yet, my name is Seth, and I want to thank you all for continuing to listen. I know I haven't been as quick to get episodes out as I want to. I've got a lot to share with you all today, but, ladies and gentlemen, before I do that, I want to remind you that if you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, you can email me at b_nrp@yahoo.com or leave me a post or comment on Facebook at The NR Podcast. That's The NR Podcast on Facebook. Also, if you could hit like or subscribe, depending on what platform you're using, or leave a review, or perhaps leave a 5-star rating if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. Now, today, I'll be continuing my series on the dangers of the Great Reset and what it will do to our country. And later on, towards the end of the show, I will be sharing some thoughts surrounding the recent election here in Springfield. So, did you guys hear that Roy Blunt has announced he won't be running for re-election? This is great news. Yes, there is always the possibility that a Democrat or leftist could win and take over his seat, but unless you've been living under a rock in Missouri over the last few decades, you know that it wouldn't be a whole lot difference between the Democrat and Roy Blunt. He is in the top 5 ranked Republicans in the Senate. He's been in D.C. practically my whole adult life, I think. He is a rhino. He is establishment. And it is way past time for him to vacate his seat and fade into obscurity. Him and his buddy, Cocaine Mitch. It is way past time for his family's influence on politics in Missouri, as well as D.C., to be challenged and diminished. It is because of corrupt, elitist politicians like him that the Republican Party and the right are so spineless and weak. I've heard that former Governor Eric Greitens is thinking of running for his seat. I'm telling you right now, that is the last person we need vying for Blunt's seat. The last. He may have done a couple of good things in his short stint, but that dude has way too much baggage to risk losing another R seat in Congress. Moving on. So, there have been some red state governors that have lifted mask mandates and other restrictions in their states recently, which is a very good thing. It wasn't the government's business to force them in the first place. However, if you read between the lines of all this lifting of restrictions, which, as Daniel Horowitz wrote a while back, they were just as much law when they were lifted as they were before being enacted. Meaning, they weren't actually laws to begin with. They were all out of the government's bounds. In Texas and Mississippi in particular, you will find that these governors still think that they had the power to force these restrictions in the first place. meaning if they wanted to put these mandates back in place later on, they still think they have the power to do whatever they want. Better be dang sure who you are voting for on all levels from now on. There have been quite a few on the right lately that seemed to be pretty freaking solid, but have kind of turned out to be sellouts. Corporate sellouts. The most recent being Asa Hutchinson of Arkansas, selling out to Walmart. Also, Kristi Noem of South Dakota recently, with the bill on not letting biological boys play in girls' sports. Greg Abbott of Texas actually is still pretty solid conservative. But during COVID, he's done a couple of things that make me wonder who got in his ear, you know? Then, of course, there's Tate Reeves of Mississippi. Oh, and just because Parsons didn't completely lose his freaking mind on COVID restrictions here, don't think he's totally off the hook. He has played both sides of the fence this whole dang time. You wouldn't know it unless you really pay close attention to exactly what he's said. Finally, we've got the whole Major League Baseball moving their All-Star game to Denver because of the no good, really awful Georgia voting law. They moved from a city that is majority African American to Denver, Colorado, who is majority white. So, yeah. By the way, that voting law really isn't all that good. At best, it's average. It expands early voting to 17 days. That's longer than New York and California allows. Along with keeping ballot drop boxes permanent, and a few other less than desirable things, it does put in a requirement of showing some sort of government-issued ID for absentee ballots. But basically, it is more expansive than leftist New York and California in certain aspects. But, racist and voter suppression and stuff. You know, that. So, all the bullcrap being said about it, surprise, surprise, it's not true. I know, it's shocking hearing that Stacey Abrams, Major League Baseball, Coca-Cola, Delta Airlines, and good old Joe Biden have all lied out their ears to you. Go ahead and collect yourself. I know how shocked you must be. Okay then, let's take a break. I'll be right back with part two of the Great Stakeholder Scam. You are listening to the New Resistance Podcast. Hey guys, I want to take a few seconds here and tell you about an app called Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast. If you're thinking about starting a show of your own, I really encourage you to check it out. It's really easy to use and it's free. And your episodes are automatically made available on most of the major podcasting platforms. Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, Overcast, Pocket Cast, TuneIn, etc. Just go to your app store and download Anchor, or go to anchor.fm.
Civil unrest. Polarization. The disruption of technology. Economic destabilization. All culminating in a complete implosion of American trust. The results? Running to big government for help to save the day. and scare away the big bad wolf of uncertainty. The result has been a slow but steady merging of government and corporations. But none of this has happened by chance.
Yeah, it's bad. Threat to the Republic and to the order of American society, bad.
The civil unrest we've seen, the polarization we've all experienced, the economic destabilization has all been conveniently helped along by our elected leaders in Washington who support a new world order, socialists, progressives. It's all been spurred on by the socialists, all within our own borders, who want nothing more than complete control over every facet of your life. For a while, climate change was going to get them there. After all, the Green New Deal had everything to do with furthering the tight grasp of big government that currently is hanging around your neck.
I can't find common ground if somebody says climate change is just not happening when almost all the world's scientists tell us it is. I don't know where to start talking to you about this.
But it didn't begin there with sweet little AOC. It began way back in 1992 with a plan called Agenda 21, the plan about moving toward a centralized government with fighting climate change as the proxy to get us there. Agenda 21 was later updated to Agenda 30, and now, all of a sudden, climate change wasn't enough. And last October, the creators of this plan for takeover added preparation for a global pandemic to it as well. Surprise, surprise, here we are in the midst of a pandemic and socialists declaring it an opportunity
to reshape the way we do business.
This pandemic is giving our favorite socialists the chance to enact a new world order in a way climate change never could. Prepare yourselves for the coronavirus war game.
Kind of eerie, isn't it? Welcome back. By the way, I'll be posting the links to all the articles and videos that I used and watched during my research on the show's Facebook page so that you can do your own homework and see for yourself the what, who, how, and why this is all happening. I know that I told you during the last episode that I would be splitting my reporting on the Great Reset into two parts. I've decided, after considering the incredible amount of stuff that there is to digest, that I would break it up into three parts instead. That way you can have time to take in each part and fully digest it before I go on to the next part. Now, in part one, I told you that Joe Biden and his administration are pursuing a, quote, very radical restructuring of the way we live our lives, end quote. And that a lot of the things that he and his ilk, along with big corporations and big banks, have been saying and doing over the past few months to years would make a whole lot more sense by the end. This is still true, even though I've decided to split it into three parts. That radical restructuring was called the Great Reset. Capitalism will be deviously morphed into a public-private partnership, if you will. A global authoritarian merging of government and big business called stakeholder capitalism. If you remember, I also told you that this reset was put together and is being spearheaded by the World Economic Forum and its founder, Klaus Schwab. And you will get to hear more than enough from him today to know what a scheming little fascist of a man he is. A lot of the things he and others involved say sound great, but knowing what they actually mean and plan to do will reveal the true evil. The aim of this is to reset the global economy and to revamp every single aspect of our society, to bring on a centralized authoritarian monster of global government control. It is very well thought out and planned out. They're not hiding it. Every bit of their plan is out in the open for anyone to see. They have a plan for everything. Trust me on this. You can find their plans as well as every quote and piece of audio by them that I share and play for you today on the WEF's website, www.weforum.org, or on their YouTube channel, which I am positive will never be censored and deplatformed, because Google and YouTube support and are involved with the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset. They are telling us what they are going to do and what is coming next. Unfortunately, hardly anybody is listening. Well, I am. And my hope is, after listening to this show and doing your own homework, you will too. And that you will let more and more and more people know as well. So this move towards a centralized government began back in 1992 with the UN's Agenda 21, using climate change as their proxy to achieve it. I don't have time to dive into great detail on this particular mess today, but I will give you a kind of just below surface level view of it, so that you can get enough of a sense of where all of this Great Reset nonsense ultimately came from. In 1992, 178 countries got together in Brazil and adopted what would be called Agenda 21. See, the 21 is because this is a plan for the 21st century. The stated goal was to, quote, build a global partnership for sustainable development to improve human lives and protect the environment, end quote. Protect the environment, supposedly. Now, they came out with 17 of what is called sustainable development goals. Like the Green New Deal, most of the policy proposals had nothing to do whatsoever with protecting the environment. I'm sure that's surprising to you. In September of 2000, they added universal health care, universal education, and wealth redistribution. Basically the very thing the Green New Deal is about today. Except it isn't green, and it isn't new. It was hatched almost 30 years ago. You didn't really think AOC and the others came up with this crap all on their own, did you? Anyways, in 2015, they changed the name to Agenda 2030. I will explain the significance of the 2030 later on in the episode. And before I go any further, and this goes for any topic or issue I have talked about or will talk about in the future, when I do say things like, I'll explain this or that later on in the segment or another show, etc., and I don't follow through with that, I am telling you to please feel free to drop me an email or drop me a post on social media and tell me so. And I will make it straight with either you or the audience as a whole. That also goes for if I get something wrong or something you think I've gotten wrong about the issue at hand as well. I am not even a little bit comfortable with putting something out that gives someone an incomplete or false understanding about something. My intention is to always give you a complete factual view of the things I talk about. This is partially why it's taken me so long in between episodes. I want you all to know the absolute truth. I do all of the research by myself. I know for a fact that I am very prone to saying I will explain or do something later on, then continue on with the conversation and completely forget about going back and finishing a thought. I am really bad at it sometimes. Now, if it happens to be something I am pretty dang sure that you're wrong on, I won't ever hesitate to debate you on it. I won't argue, but I will debate. Okay. Now, let's see. 2015 changed to Agenda 2030. All this is on the UN's website, by the way. 2030. Changed it in order to, quote, provide a shared blueprint for peace and prosperity for people and the planet, now and into the future. End quote. Agenda 2030 has penetrated all the way down to locally. Look up local sustainability strategy followed by the name of your town. I haven't looked into this in any kind of detail for Springfield yet, but hint, hint, if someone wanted to do that and email me, I would gladly report on it, and if it was significant enough, bring them on to talk about it even. Agenda 2030 is all about inventory and control. People are the disease and need to be taken out of rural areas and herded into crowded cities. It makes it easier to surveil and manipulate and control that way. None of this is actually about bettering the environment or people's lives. It's about centralizing power and controlling every step we take. If you haven't picked up on that yet, you will by the time this program is over. Among other things, it says in the 2030 Charter, quote, what we are announcing today, an agenda for global action for the next 15 years, is a charter for people and planet in the 21st century. Children and young women and men are critical agents of change and will find in the new goals a platform to channel their infinite capacities for activism into the creation of a better world. Talk like that is how we end up with this.
My message is that we'll be watching you. This is all wrong. I shouldn't be up here. I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean. Yet you all come to us young people for hope. How dare you? People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you? For more than 30 years, the science has been crystal clear. How dare you continue to look away and come here saying that you're doing enough? You say you hear us and that you understand the urgency. But no matter how sad and angry I am, I do not want to believe that. Because if you really understood the situation and still kept on failing to act, then you would be evil, and that I refuse to believe.
By the way, you know her speeches and her Facebook posts are written by her father and a man whose name escapes me right now, but he is some kind of UN delegate. These people will use anyone and anything they can to achieve their goals. They're sick. Sick people. Now, in October 2019, in New York, Johns Hopkins University, the World Economic Forum, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation founded and put together what was officially called a pandemic exercise to, quote, illustrate areas where public and private partnerships will be necessary during the response to a severe pandemic, end quote. What they actually did was get together to war game a plan for a global pandemic. They are now using COVID-19 to enact that plan, by the way. Business people, so-called health experts, government officials, union leaders, UN reps, all participated. They called it Event 201. The name comes from, in their description, there are roughly around 200 epidemic events around the globe every year. And it's the big one everyone worries about, that 201st event, a severe global pandemic that would supposedly require cooperation between big businesses, governments, and key international institutions. You'll never guess which international institutions were used. Go ahead. Take a second. Guess. The World Health Organization was designated as the gatekeeper of all info. And wait for it. Wait for it. The United Nations was suggested and used for who would give out the centralized orders. Imagine that. They wargamed every possible response, down to every minute detail. Here is the audio from the video that everyone in attendance was shown right as they sat down to begin.
It began in healthy-looking pigs, months, perhaps years ago. A new coronavirus spread silently within herds. Gradually, farmers started getting sick. Infected people got a respiratory illness with symptoms ranging from mild flu-like signs to severe pneumonia. The sickest required intensive care. Many died.
Change pigs to bats, and you have exactly what ended up happening in 2020. To be clear, I'm not suggesting at all that the people behind Event 201 created or were responsible for the COVID-19 pandemic, which began just 2 or 3 months after this was held. They freaking nailed this one. Almost all of their predictions actually came true. The crowded hospitals, to lack of PPE and ventilators, to experimental drugs would come out, etc. One overriding theme pops up all throughout Event 201. And you can still go online, by the way, and watch video of every minute of this. Quote, the very important role that global public-private partnership plays in preparing and responding to pandemics, end quote. No matter where the scenario and its response went, always disaster. It was rigged from the start. In the scenario, 65 million people died. 65 million. Global GDP shrank 11%. Markets went down 40%. Their solution always ended in disaster and chaos. Let me play for you the audio from the final produced video shown to the Event 201 attendees.
Attempts to control media messaging, originally aimed only at health-related misinformation, became used increasingly to quash political dissent. Economists say the economic turmoil caused by such a pandemic will last for years, perhaps a decade. The societal impacts, the loss of faith in government, the distrust of news, and the breakdown of social cohesion could last even longer. We have to ask, did this need to be so bad? Are there things we could have done in the 5 to 10 years leading up to the pandemic that would have lessened the catastrophic consequences? We believe the answer is yes. So are we, as a global community, now finally ready to do the hard work needed to prepare for the next pandemic?
The video describes four things that, in this scenario, they came about as a result of the global pandemic. But in reality, these things have been brewing in the U.S. and around the world. They are all, in my opinion, things that have helped create the mess that this world is in right now. It all really started popping up during Obama and then Trump up till 2020. Then accelerated to warp speed when coronavirus came along. The WEF will, and already has, pointed to the existence of these four things as all the more reason for a great reset. They are 1. Polarization and civil unrest. The civil unrest that we've seen here has been priming us for this over the past few years. Far left, some on the right, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, etc. 10 years ago, we never would have expected Antifa to be terrorizing people in the name of communism and Marxism, and the Democrat Party openly supporting them. 2, economic destabilization, forced recession, stock market plunge, endless, reckless spending by DC, etc. 3, tech disruption. Big tech colluding to censor, demonetize, and deplatform opposing ideologies, destroying competition, like Parler. Manipulating search results to only include approved information. Messing with elections, and privacy becoming less and less possible to have. All of these things together leads to 4. Trust implosion. We've lost trust in our government, media, tech, finance, justice system, our corporations, and our education system. Their predictions will and have been used to push their radical agenda. It is their intention to fundamentally transform the whole world and transform it into a centralized monstrosity. They tried for decades to do it with climate change, but it was taking too long and losing amongst the people. The outbreak of COVID was just what they were waiting for. Agenda 21 is a 100-year plan for the 21st century, starting from the year 2000. Agenda 2030 is a 30-year milestone of that plan. The pandemic has put this agenda on a revolution footing. By now, this footing is global. Let's take a quick break. I'll be back in a couple of minutes. You are listening to the New Resistance Podcast.
The idiots are taking over. The idiots are taking over.
Alright, so let's get back into the Great Reset. Now, before the break, I talked about Event 201 and how it was a war game for if a global pandemic ever hit. Also, how the plan and responses that they came up with are the very responses that we eventually saw forced on us just a few short months later. Let's continue, shall we? Again, I want to remind all of you that you must do your homework and not just solely take my word on anything. It is very important that you know exactly what is going on. It is a big key to making sure that the Great Reset is exposed and prayerfully that it is stopped. I will give you the evidence and send you over to their websites. I will post all of the links to the websites and videos that I used for this episode on the show's Facebook page within the next few days. I really suggest you find and read, watch, and then, as soon as possible, somehow archive all of it before enough info is exposed and they start taking a lot of it down. Don't put it past them to do that. People say all the time, I can't wait till we get back to normal. We're not ever going back to normal unless people wake up. The sooner we realize this and accept this, the sooner we can get on with fighting back. Like I said before, the political, financial elites around the world are openly plotting together to destroy capitalism and the Western world and remake it into their own image. Everyone from Fortune 500 CEOs, banking, monarchies, union bosses, health experts, presidents and prime ministers, the director of the IMF, the CEOs and heads of OPEC, NATO, and Interpol, the co-founder of Occupy Wall Street, the highest echelons of political power, are all on board with the Great Reset. As they see it, the clock is ticking. They have about 9 years to pull it off. Those behind this are the same people behind Agenda 21 2030, as well as Event 201. And as the year 2030 was the goal for achieving Agenda 2030's goals, the goal for achieving this reset is the year 2030 as well. Coronavirus and the civil unrest are the final catalyst to push it through. The media is doing a terrible job of reporting, if they are at all anything about this. Partly because they're either in on it, or it's because it's all too complex and, heaven forbid, the media do any actual digging. Of course, if you call them on it, or try to warn people about any aspect of the Great Reset, you are blacklisted, demonetized, etc., and made to look like a conspiracy theorist. Imagine that. It's their favorite word to call us. It was said March 22nd of 2020, pertaining to the shutdown of our economy last year, by a man named James Bullard, who is the president of the Federal Bank of St. Louis. Quote, "This is a planned, organized, partial shutdown of the U.S. economy. We are throttling back output on purpose to meet health guidelines. Transfer income to affected households. Call it pandemic relief. Get transfers to businesses that are affected heavily and come out on the other side. Identical economy. Produce the same goods as before." End quote. Okay, that's not actually what was going on, though. I mean, it sounds nice packaged like that. However, there is another agenda at play. Our economy and banking system was collapsing. After all, this is meant to be a reset. The Fed said that unemployment by June 2020 would be 32.1%. That's 52.8 million people out of work. Higher even than the Great Depression. The actual rate for June 2020, however, was 11.1%. By the way, if you're starting to see that the Fed was up to no good, don't worry. It goes on. The scare tactics weren't over with. In late July 2020, CNBC reported that the U.S. economy had suffered its worst plunge in history with a decline of 32.9% in the second quarter. Way worse than the Great Depression. Biden's campaign then used that to show how terrible Trump was handling things, saying, quote, "The depth of economic devastation our nation is experiencing, it's a failure of presidential leadership." End quote. Well, that would have been true if that number was correct. Like pretty much all of the other sensationalized crap, it was not true of the 2020 second quarter number. The real number, 9.5%. The 32.9% was the annual number. The GDP would have had to have fallen by 9.5% for four straight quarters in order to reach 32%. And their plan for a V-shaped recovery? Yeah, that was a lie too. They needed it to be much, much worse. They needed Donald Trump out of there. His and Republican governors pushed to achieve the V-shaped recovery threw a monkey wrench into their plan, which was handed to Trump as a pre-planned attack. In fact, get this. In early August 2020, the Fed freaking wanted to shut us down all over again. Restarting was never the plan. A reset is what they had in mind the whole time. Remember, they're trying to usher in a new era of centralized government control, after all. It was Trump's relentless push starting in April that kept us from getting to 32% unemployment. They scared us into compliance by beating us over the head if we dared step out of line, while simultaneously as we began to freely give up our rights, a wave of civil unrest spread all over the country, and still is to some degree. The global economic experts told us everything would be okay if we would just stupidly agree to cut our wrist and bleed into the tub. Is there an expert on the left of any kind that has any measurable amount of respect left anymore after this past year? I want to play for you a clip of George Soros himself from January 2020, where he talks about Trump's booming economy.
At the same time, Trump's economic team has managed to overheat an already buoyant economy. The stock market, already celebrating Trump's military success, is breaking up out to reach new heights. But an overheated economy can't be kept at the boiling point for too long. If all this had happened close to the election, it would have assured his re-election. His problem is that the elections are still 10 months away, And in a revolutionary situation, that's a lifetime.
What revolutionary situation was he referring to exactly? Remember, this was about a month before COVID and 4 months before the death of George Floyd. Did he just happen to get lucky? Was he able to predict all of the rioting and looting and chaos that we saw last summer several months in advance? We have old George publicly admitting that the roaring economy was actually a problem and that only a revolution could stop his reelection. So why did they really want Trump so out so badly? Because he never would have agreed to any of this. Because he stood in the way of this global governance. Can you understand a little better now why Trump might have thought so strongly that the election was stolen away from him? I sure can. This sounds really weird, doesn't it? But it gets a lot weirder when you consider where exactly Soros was speaking. He was speaking at the World Economic Forum's annual summit in January of 2020. The World Economic Forum, who bankrolled Event 201, as in the same meeting where they wanted to push a public-private merger in response to a pandemic, as in the same event led by members of the United Nations Agenda 2030, those guys, everything and everyone is connected here. Now I want to share a clip from WEF Great Reset founder Klaus Schwab.
Some people may say this is too idealistic, but what other choice do we have? At least we have to try. We may fail, and next generations or even we ourselves will have to pay the price for our failure. At least we should try.
George Soros was saying this same thing 10 years ago. And then another clip I want to play for you is from Prince Charles and this so-called golden opportunity we have.
We have a golden opportunity to seize something good from this crisis. Its unprecedented shockwaves may well make people more receptive to big visions of change. A global crisis like pandemics and climate change know no borders, and highlight just how interdependent we are as one people sharing one planet.
Climate change gave them a handbook and a path on how to seize control of private businesses into the hands of the state. Coronavirus gave them the means to get it done. In an article from the World Economic Forum's website titled, "Now is the Time for a Great Reset," Klaus Schwab says, quote, "To achieve a better outcome, the world must act jointly and swiftly to revamp all aspects of our societies and economies, from education to social contracts, working conditions. Every country must participate, and every industry must be transformed. In short, we need a great reset of capitalism." End quote. What do social contracts and working conditions and social justice and capitalism have to do with any of this? All of this is being done under the guise of protecting the environment, keeping us safe from viruses, and making things better. Making things better. Wow. In that article, he goes on to explain just what their golden opportunity really looks like, talking about countries coordinating on tax regulations, fiscal policy, upgrading trade agreements, creating the conditions for a stakeholder economy. It also includes wealth taxes, ending oil and gas subsidies, quote, fairness, building green and urban infrastructure, creating incentives for businesses to improve their track record on environmental social governance scores, or ESG scores, which I will explain in further detail what that is in just a second. Now, if I or anyone else who sees this for what it really is were to tell all this stuff without documentation or evidence, be honest, you'd say, and rightly so probably, that I was a paranoid conspiracy theorist, right? Don't lie. But listen to this on a World Economic Forum produced podcast with Klaus Schwab.
So what does all this mean for the respective roles of government and business? After decades since the 1980s of Thatcher and Reagan, when the orthodoxy in much of the West was that smaller government and free markets were best, we are now seeing the return of government.
What we have seen was kind of, how shall I say, dominance of business in global affairs in the last two decades. Now this is balancing out. We have the return of government, government even taking participation in companies, in any case, touching conditions, safeguarding measures. It's necessary to have a very open approach.
They appear to be trying to criticize crony capitalism. Government puts the crony in crony capitalism, and their solution is more government involvement. Good grief. In an article published July of 2020 titled COVID-19's Legacy, Mr. Little Big Shot says, quote, societies could be poised to become either more equitable or the opposite, geared towards more solidarity or greater individualism. Economies, when they recover, could be characterized by greater inclusivity and more attuned to our global commons, or they could simply return to business as usual, now revealed to be, in so many ways, an untenable status quo. End quote. America has always sided with individualism. It is the reason we are exceptional. We are the most powerful, most generous nation in history. Therefore, it must be torn down and destroyed, right? How in the world are more people not talking about this? Now, I want to bring to attention two WEF reports from July of 2020. They're the first two from a series of reports called New Nature Economy. I strongly recommend you read all of them, start to finish, and send them to your representatives, senators, governor, etc., and warn them. I guarantee you this stuff will be discussed, if not already, by lawmakers in the coming months and years. Their target for everything is 2030. However, the push, by now, has been thrown into overdrive. Anyways, in the first report, it talks about two of the top goals in this effort to shift from capitalism to this global socialism. They are, one, to link climate catastrophes to private businesses, and two, identify which industries need transforming. Basically, if you own a business that is linked to nature, and spoiler alert, by their definition, almost every business can be, you will be brought under the government's heel. They make pretty clear that their intention is to catalyze a public-private momentum in 2020 and 2021, which is kind of what Hitler did in Germany with privately owned businesses. They didn't take sole ownership like the Soviet Union did. You can keep your business, but you're going to share the wealth and you're going to do what we tell you to. Oh, and we're running it. This is what National Socialism is. In 2015, the UN created something called the TCFD, which stands for Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, to press the environmental initiatives of Agenda 21-2030 on the banking and corporate sectors. It produces reports to banks and corporations that give these weird metrics on how much risk your business is to climate change. This is what the ESG score is that I talked about earlier. You've seen all these big businesses pledging net zero emissions by 2030 and blah, 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 blah. Well, that alone is no longer good enough. The UN will be weaponized to govern private businesses by integrating TCFD into governments. They will stop just producing reports and essentially become government auditors of businesses deemed to require assessment and disclosure of potential financial impacts. These disclosures will be made in public annual financial filings. As a business owner, you will have no choice. On page 19 of the first report, it says, quote, insurance premium increases arising due to settlements from pollution, end quote. Are you catching where they are headed with this? Failure to comply, lose your insurance. Lose your insurance, lose your certification and your license. Lose your license, lose your business. Remember, you're in a partnership. So according to page 8, there are three ways that your business can be brought under the heavy boot of government. One, when businesses depend directly on nature for operations, supply chain performance, real estate asset values, physical security, business continuity. Told you they would find a way to fit every business in there somehow. Two and three are, for the most part, the same. Anytime a business might have a negative consequence from climate change, they can be subjugated under government regulation. You see, these were added to catch the ones that they might have missed. As I'm sure you know, if you paid at least 5 minutes of attention, that their claim is that climate change is a catastrophic calamity that will spare no one. The sky is falling, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. In the second report, it outlines what this new world might look like. They want to reduce the footprint of agriculture and fishing on ecosystems while pushing compact development in cities. Essentially, they want to buy up all the farmland, which Bill Gates has recently started to do. Push people from the suburbs and rural areas into large cities. Everything will be digitized, tracked, and recorded. Privacy, personal liberty, a relic of the past. Private property, thing of the past. The collective is now your responsibility. You, as an individual, do not matter anymore. The government, the state, will be your master from here on out. Look, the word socialism has been thrown around a lot over the past few years. If there's one thing I wish the last administration would have done, I personally see it as a huge mistake. That is embarking on a relentless campaign to explain and educate the public on exactly what socialism really is. I think Laura Ingraham made a suggestion that Trump should have recorded several fireside chats, much like what FDR did, and explained the horrors of what socialism really brings to countries. It has always ended in misery and death. Everywhere it's been tried. Everywhere. That is exactly what this plan, this Great Reset, is, ladies and gentlemen. Global socialism. And it will end up the same way if it is allowed to continue. I say we stand up together as fellow Americans, as fellow human beings. Come together, raise our voices, and fight like hell for freedom. Please tune in next time for the conclusion of this three-part series. It'll be an eye-opener for sure. Now let's take a break. I'll be right back. You're listening to the New Resistance Podcast.
Hey, it's Michael Hasty, and you're listening to the New Resistance Podcast. Thank you, and tune in again. See ya.
This show is brought to you through Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast. Check it out wherever you download apps or go to anchor.fm. I also want to remind you that you can email any questions, comments, or suggestions about this show to the_NRP@yahoo.com. That's the_NRP@yahoo.com. So, as I mentioned in the beginning of this episode, I have some thoughts on the local election here in Springfield on April 6th. There were 4 seats on the city council and the mayor's seat available, plus 3 seats on the SPS school board. I want to run some numbers by you. We had 13.5% voter turnout, or roughly 16,000 votes. Out of roughly 115,490 registered voters, 8.9% of those 115,000 voters decided the mayor's seat. 5.3% decided who would fill general seat A. 7.6% decided who'd fill general seat B. All of those numbers are just simply unacceptable. I am really excited that, and by the way, a huge congrats to Angela Romijn for winning her race in Zone 1. That is a great start. However, we lost the other 4 seats. Every one of the 5 challengers, Michael Hasty, the Aiton brothers, Kaufman, Romijn, worked themselves silly. As did their volunteers, for which I was one of them. We walked many miles, knocked on thousands of doors all over the city. I have to tell you, the further along we got in this campaign, the more I began to really fall in love with Springfield. I didn't expect that at all. Not that I didn't love parts of Springfield before or care about the people of Springfield, but I hadn't experienced certain parts of the city before. It was an experience that I would cherish for the rest of my life. I also gained some new friends that I have grown to deeply care about. These are people who truly have a heart for the citizens of this city and care about the future of Springfield. We formed a bond that only walking 40 to 50 miles, knocking on 3 to 4,000 doors, getting yelled at or told off at house after house, being chased out of Woodgate Apartments by the manager and opponent of the candidate I was volunteering for, walking past all of the old decrepit, empty houses that looked like a strong fart would blow it the rest of the way over, all the people in Grant Beach Park who looked at us like, "What are you doing here?" Nobody ever comes around here asking what our concerns are and actually care what we have to say. Or getting your door hanger crumbled up and thrown back at you through your car window and told, "Here's your trash back." A bond that only those things, when experienced together, can form. I'm saddened that others weren't there to experience those with us. The others gave up a chance to try and put Springfield on a better path. I am so much more than frustrated. I am thoroughly disappointed and pissed. So many people have been saying for a year now, we have to get these jerks out of there. We have to vote these people out. We have to do whatever it takes. Those things have been said all over town by all kinds of people. However, when it came time last summer to keep the pressure on the council at their meetings, when it became obvious that pressure at meetings only wasn't going to cut it, we became infected with the same defeatist mentality that always infects the right. People stopped showing up. At first, we were keeping them way late in the night by signing up so many people to speak so late some weeks that they weren't able to finish their agenda and were forced to hold an extra meeting that next day. It was great. It was just great. Then when it came time to volunteer for these campaigns, end of last year through all the way up to April 6th, even when opportunities were announced, the candidates largely heard crickets. Which I get. I really do. Not everyone can handle knocking on doors and walking that far. I totally understand. I personally was about as nervous as one person could be half the time about doing it. It scared me to death at first. I don't even like talking to strangers on the phone. People also work during some of the hours of the day we were doing it during the week. I understand people that have kids, have hectic schedules, have physical limitations, etc., that make it impossible or very hard to be out there all the time. But not even on the weekends? Not even 1 hour every week or two? Really? After what they freaking did to us last year, after what they are still succeeding at doing to us, do they have to order the cops to be out there beating the crap out of us, or for simply not wearing a stupid mask? Do they have to force us into our houses and weld or barricade our doors shut like in China? Do the cops have to start busting into churches in the middle of services to ticket and or arrest churchgoers for simply having service outside in their cars? Do we need our jails to actually start emptying out of real violent criminals and filling up with ordinary people who've done nothing wrong? Do mobs of nosy leftist Karens need to start singling out those who are minding their own dang business and harassing, yelling in their faces, assaulting, spitting on, beating people up, showing up at homes, sending death threats, all for refusing to bend over and take the dictates from the out of control city council, mayor, and health departments? Do we need all of these things to happen here before people start waking up enough to say That is it. I've had it. What is it going to take? How much pain do they have to inflict? Huh? How much? How much pain and loss of liberty is it going to take? How much? How many suicides from being forced into isolation away from all of their family, their friends, and their support network is it going to take? Seriously, how many? How many kids have to be put into a situation, young kids, where they think that death is the best option to ending the pain they are going through? How many of them need to actually follow through with that thought? How many needles have to be filled up and plunged into a person's vein because they can't take the isolation at home and out in public because all choice in their life has been stolen from them by the elitists in City Hall? How many mornings do people have to wake up with tears already flowing down their face because even in their dreams, the pain is just too unbearable? Sorry. Before people will stop making every excuse in the book as to why they can't stand up and get out of their comfort zones and take action to save our city. Because folks, even though we don't have the police ganging up on us and beating us for not having masks on, I promise you that every single one of those horrible things happened or is still happening in this city. I experienced two of those things myself. The mental and emotional consequences will be felt for decades to come. People seeking treatment for mental and emotional health issues has absolutely skyrocketed in Springfield over the past year. It is sad. It is unbelievable. This is all unacceptable. If all you have done the past year is just complain, but we're unwilling to do anything about it. I'm not talking about you have to become some super activist or something. Then you've kind of forfeited your right to complain. If anything I have said here offends you and makes you mad, then to be honest, you're probably one of those people I'm talking to. You can be mad and say whatever you want to me. That's okay. But I encourage you to use that anger to take action towards taking back the power in Springfield. We do not have to take their crap anymore. We never did. Let's come together and fight. We may have lost this battle, but the resistance has just begun. Thank you very, very much for listening to this and every other episode. Stay engaged, stay focused, never give in. Have a wonderful week. My name is Seth, and this is the New Resistance Podcast. See ya!